If you lived in the British Columbia, UK, United Kingdom, and you had a restaurant, and so you had a sign up for your guest with an arrow, and it said Lou, L-O-O. If you were interested in having visitors from the United States, what else might you put on that sign?
Restroom.
That is the restroom. If you had a grocery business in the UK, and so you have what we call baskets, grocery baskets. But in the UK, you might put up a sign, trolleys. So if I'm going there to shop and I'm looking for the baskets and I talk to one of the employees, they said the trolleys are out there. What trolleys? What are we talking about? And so you might have a word of explanation if you were catering to an English-speaking customer. And here we might say, when you go out in public, it's fine to wear some pants and people to see you in your pants. If you were in the UK and you said that, they might look at you kind of strange because one of the ways they use the word pants is underwear. So each culture or country or have their different languages and idioms. So when we read the Gospel of Matthew, he doesn't explain them. That is, he uses Jewish terms, and he doesn't explain them, which points to the fact that he has a certain kind of reader in view. Not that he doesn't want Gentiles to read it, but he's focusing on Jewish readers who would understand the customs and the terms that he uses. However, in the Gospel of Mark, we talked about in our class on Wednesday that he uses Latinisms. That is, words that were common to the Roman language and the Roman culture. Which, if you're familiar with that, know that when you read Mark, you say, well, he must have had a Roman reader in mind. Because he has words that they would understand and that they would use. When we get to Luke, we're going to see similar type things, that he has words and phrases that he uses that he may explain. Because he has Gentile readers in mind, he may give some explanation of some Jewish customs or words for the Gentile readers. We are also going to talk about the fact that he uses some special terms. You won't be able to note that in your translation oftentimes. We'll talk about that. If I was talking with Josh, for example, about the tools that doctors use in their trade and that he observes as he does his work, he might use some term, I don't know what he's talking about, but to me it might be called a completely different thing because the doctors would use some kind of specialty word that they're familiar with in describing that. We're going to see that in our observation of Luke today. So we have at the very top here is Luke, the author of the Gospel of Luke. So you have in your Bible, you don't have obviously the one Luke wrote. He wrote it about 2,000 years ago. It's got his name on it. But how do you know he's the author? That's obviously put there by the translators. Or someone along the way that compiled these books. is he really the author of the Gospel of Luke? Well, we could start going back in time, and you have that in your first paragraph. We can go all the way back to about 400 A.D., the time of Jerome, and he attributes this particular gospel to Luke and says he was a medical man. We'll look more at that in just a minute. A medical man, a physician, in other words. And also that he was a companion to Paul. Now we know it's to Luke that we're reading about in the book of Acts, and that he wrote the gospel. So he identifies the Luke that he's talking about is the one that wrote a compilation of the good news of Jesus Christ. Then we have Eusebius, you see in that paragraph, 260 to 340 A.D. So you're moving back in time. He attributes the gospel to Luke, the physician. Then you have these other names that I have there in that paragraph. Origen, Clement, Irenaeus, gets all the way back to 125 to 202. You're getting back close to the first century itself. And these attribute the gospel to Luke. Maybe that's of no interest to you. It is to me, because if I read in a handbook of the Bible or in a commentary, Luke wrote this gospel, I want to know, how do you know? And so here's external evidence. People outside the book, and certainly outside the commentator, and outside our traditions of religion that we're familiar with, who said, yes, Luke is the author, all the way dating back to at least the second century. But we're going to see there are indications in the book, and that's what we have in your lesson, internal evidences, that favor the fact that this man named Luke, we'll see that he is indeed a physician, wrote this particular gospel. And there are indicators within the book itself. We'll begin here in Colossians chapter 4, verse 14. Colossians 4, 14. So Paul's in prison. He's sending greetings. And Luke, the beloved physician, sends you his greetings. So Luke is with Paul in prison. We'll say more about that in a little bit. But he's with there, and he calls him the beloved physician. This not only tells you what his trade was, and therefore the language that he might be familiar with, the language of doctors, but points to the fact that he was somewhat of an educated man. And when he began his book, you remember he talked about the extensive research that he did so that what he recorded would be accurate in the first four verses of the Gospel of Luke. We talked about that in a previous class. Now, let's compare some passages. And we'll just take one of these. We'll start in Matthew 8:14. Matthew chapter 8. In verse 14, when Jesus came into Peter's home, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick in bed with a fever. Luke records that, but he adds something. What does he add? A high fever. So if you go over to Luke's account in chapter 4 and verse 38, you note something that a doctor particularly might note. And he says, she was suffering from a high fever. That doesn't prove he's a doctor, but that would go along with the concept of him being attentive to and knowledgeable about a person's physical condition. Over in Luke chapter 5 and verse 12, you've got your page open to Luke 4, so just either on that next page or the one after it. Look down at verse 12. While he was in one of the cities, behold, there was a man. Now you'll note Luke says covered with leprosy. There's a footnote if you have the New American Standard, and the margin said literally full of leprosy. That's one of those things that we as English readers might not understand if they'd have translated it literally, full of. We think of being full of what you ate, something like that, but that's not this. And so the translators are doing exactly what we talked about a while ago. They're translating the original language into some words that we can understand, covered with leprosy. But the point is, he talks about not just the fact he had leprosy, but apparently he had a bad case. He was covered with leprosy. When you look at Matthew's account and Mark's account, he just says he had leprosy. He doesn't mention the extent of it. So if you go to the doctor and you say, I've got a rash. Do you say, oh, here, take this for the rash? Or say, where is it at? How bad is it? What part of your body is it on? And this would be characteristic of a physician of that day as well. All right, look at, just turn the page to Luke chapter 6 and verse 6. And you can compare the verses that are there in Matthew 12 and Mark 3 if you wish. But he adds something here in chapter 6 and verse 6. On the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And there's a man whose hand was withered. Is that what he wrote? Right hand. The other two Gospels don't mention that. So these are synoptic. They're similar. But there are differences. And here the differences would certainly go along with the idea that the writer of this Gospel paid attention to physical details in people. Maladies. Illnesses, etc. His right hand was withered. All right, let's go over to Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22. You know, if you went to the doctor and you say, I've got a problem in my hand, does he say, well, here, take this treatment? Or might he say, which hand? And so Luke notes that kind of thing. In Luke chapter 22 and verse 50. You see that Matthew talks about this in Mark. We've got the verses there. But Luke, again, adds a detail that's not in the other two. What does he add? The right ear. You go to the doctor and you say, one of my ears hurt. What's he going to ask you? Which one? Right. His right ear. And again, that goes along with the idea of him being a physician. Now, this part E, 1E, that these examples we have, you will not be able to see some of these differences in your translation, but they are there. And if you're willing to spend the time and effort, you can go and look at the original words and see that that's the case. That still won't help you to see that they're different Greek words unless you're familiar with Greek words that are reflective of a medical doctor. I'm not. Yes, sir. You had a comment?
With the right ear, are we to conclude that John was a physician too, since he indicates it was the right ear?
That's a good question. John also mentions the right ear. No, I would not, because that's not common through his letter. But that's a good point that Michael makes, that John also mentions the right ear. I've got that in my notes. Didn't say anything about it. Thank you, Michael. And so some of these, well, you'll find cases where another writer mentions it. But you see this throughout Luke's Gospel. So that's a good point that Michael makes. In Luke chapter 5 and verse 18. Now, when you compare 5:18, just open to say, oh, I don't know, let's go to Matthew 9:2. By comparison. Matthew chapter 9 verse 2. So if I read Matthew 9:2, they brought to him a paralytic on a bed. If I look at Luke 5:18, some men were carrying on a bed a man who was paralyzed. Looks like the same thing, doesn't it? It is the same affliction. But there's two different words. And that depends on what manuscript you follow. If you if you're the kind of person that checks the actual words, you'll see that there's a family of manuscripts that uses a different word here. And from those that know the language, and I'm relying on knowledgeable people about these particular terms. For example, this first one that I have here is that it's a technical medical term, and that's in a book by A.T. Robertson. A.T. Robertson was a Greek scholar, very, very knowledgeable about the Greek language. But he also references another book by a fellow named Ramsey, very knowledgeable, who wrote a book, Luke the Physician. And I looked up these two words, and indeed one is different from the other, but connote the same kind of malady. Why would he use a different one? If indeed it was a specialized medical term, technical medical term, and he was a physician, that would explain it. So you just have to take my word for it. Unless you're willing to do the research or read these sources that I went to, you may have the same ones that will tell you that. Now, this one's interesting. Look at Luke 18:25. And you probably still have Matthew open, so open Matthew 19:24. So you're reading, you're maybe doing your daily Bible reading. You come across this. Again, I say to you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So maybe your Bible reading says read Luke, the parallel verses in Luke. So you'll go over and read Luke. And you get over to, in the Gospel of Luke, you have a very similar thing. But in Luke chapter 18:25, it says it's easier for the camel to go through the eye of a needle. Sure doesn't look like any difference, does it? Josh, is there a special term in your trade for a surgeon's needle? Can you think of one? Okay. It's been a long time since Josh did brain surgery. So, anyway, in their language, there was. Now, in Matthew and Mark's account, the word needle comes from the word to sew. In other words, a sewing needle. We're all familiar with that. But in Luke's account, again, this is based on this manuscript difference. But he uses a word that's a surgeon's needle. Now, you wouldn't know that by looking at the two verses. I wouldn't have either. Been smarter than me, pointed this out. But it serves to further confirm that here's a man that's writing from a background in medicine, medical field, and uses those kind of terms. So, here's a doctor. If you lived in that time, and you witnessed what looked like a miracle. A lame man is walking. A man who had leprosy is cleansed. What's the difference in the common guy looking at that and a doctor looking at that? It might be a little harder to deceive the medical guy. He's familiar with that kind of thing. And so Luke writes about the miracles. But he deals in medicine. He knows diseases. And so it adds a different perspective of a physician looking at these things and accounting them as well. So anyway, that's a characteristic of the Gospel of Luke for whatever interest that may be. Now you'll see our next category on the lesson is, did Luke write his Gospel for Gentile readers? So we illustrated a while ago, whether you're in the United States or the UK, depending on the kind of business you're in, you might have explanations for signs and words that may be used. indicating that you're having in view a different kind of customer, for example. So we start out with the fact that Luke was the only Gentile writer of the four Gospels. You have two apostles, Matthew and John, and then Mark, a prophet. But Luke is the only Gentile writer. Look at Colossians chapter 4. As I think we've got that question, maybe down here a little bit further. But look at it now, Colossians chapter 4. Now you know that Paul is writing from prison, one of the prison epistles. And so here we have in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 11, also Jesus, who is called Justice, these are the only workers for the kingdom of God who are from the circumcision. People who are there with him, encouraging him, he's in prison. But these are the only ones who are Jews from the circumcision. Now when you get down to verse 14, Luke, the beloved physician, sends you his greeting. But Luke is not mentioned above. It seems to point to the fact that of those men that were with him, Luke was not in the group which we call the circumcision. Because he lists some people up above, says they're the only ones that are from the circumcision. Favoring the idea that Luke was a Gentile writer. Okay, so let's go down to Luke chapter 1, verse 3. Our question number 2. Luke chapter 1, verse 3. So we ask the question, he specifically addressed his gospel to whom?
Theophilus.
You'll note I have on your lesson, some say this was a Gentile. But we cannot be certain. I don't know how we can be certain of that. But some think that was a Gentile name. So anyway, he wrote to Theophilus, if that's a Gentile name, and those who are familiar with the language, like Robertson, A.T. Robertson, probably so. Linsky is another very knowledgeable fellow about the original language. He said, most certainly, he's more positive about it. I don't know. But be that as it may, we'll see that the tone of his gospel favors the fact that he had a Gentile reader in mind, Theophilus. This point number 3, again, I can't verify for you because I'm too good to know the Greek alphabet to be able to look up words. But this point number 3 that we have in your lesson is something that people who are familiar, and maybe even today would be familiar with Greek. We don't have that many people, at least that we know, especially people that study the Bible. They talked about his Greek. And some say his opening style, as you see on the lesson, corresponded to Greek historians. The Greek shows a peculiar, strong command of the Greek language. Now, you'll note I've got but. Does that prove it's a Greek audience? I'm not saying it proves it. It's just another thing to observe by those who know something about the language that lends to that idea that he's writing for Greek readers. Point number 4, again, it's one of those things that would not prove anything by itself, but it goes in with this kind of things that we're looking at that favors the idea of a Greek writer. He begins his dating with the reigning Roman Empire and current Roman governor. And so these were things that society, the Grecian society, of course, would be able to identify with immediately. And that's how he begins his dating in his letter. Now this one is interesting, I think. Luke was a companion of Paul. Book of Acts, we know that. Chapter 16 on, he starts using the word we all the way through the end of the book. His travels, his trip to Rome, his imprisonment. So our question is, Paul viewed his ministry as a special focus to what group of people? Gentiles. Turn to Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2, verse 7. On the contrary, seeing I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised. Did Paul not preach to Jews? Sure he did. Went to the city. The first place he went was synagogue. But the focus of his mission is to preach to the Gentiles, the uncircumcised. Remember he wrote in Colossians 4, only those of the circumcision. Yes, Craig? As what?
As most excellent.
Most excellent. That's a good point Craig makes. What I've read, that is normally Christians would not use that title of a fellow Christian, but of someone in some kind of maybe governmental affair. It's interesting when he wrote the Gospel of Acts, he doesn't use the term excellent. And when we studied the book of Acts, I know you remembered everything we talked about. But that may point to the fact that as a result of Theophilus reading the Gospel of Luke, he became a Christian. And so now he writes the book of Acts. What better thing to get a Christian on the right track in his thinking about duties and obligations to fellow Christians and so forth than the book of Acts? And so that would fit very well. Good point, Craig. Appreciate you mentioning that. Look at Romans 15:16. And here again we see, he said, he's a minister of Christ Jesus to the Gentiles. Was he not a minister to the Jews too? Certainly. But in other words, the focus he's focused on, the idea of getting the gospel to the Gentile world. So, if Luke joined Paul on his second journey around 51, and we're in that neighborhood, 50, 51, traveled with him on his second journey and was with him in other things that he did, and then was on the ship with him as he went to Rome, made his appeal to Caesar, and was with him in prison. By this time, it's a good reason to believe Matthew certainly had already written his gospel. Not sure about when Mark was written. So if Luke's going to write a gospel and he's been traveling, becoming a dear friend and associate and co-worker with Paul, would it not make sense that he would write a gospel that would focus on the Gentile world? And so, being a companion of Paul is just another thing that undergirds the idea that he would have that kind of focus in his letter. We're not in Luke very far until we see, certainly, it has a different emphasis than Matthew. Luke chapter 3, when you open Matthew 1, what's the first thing you read about? The genealogy. And what kind of genealogy? Royal genealogy. Something that would be very important to the Jews, the kingly line. Matthew doesn't have that at all. He has a genealogy. But it seems that it's a fleshly genealogy, which also needs to be determined. But where Matthew goes all the way back to Abraham, if you look at the last verse of Luke chapter 3, who does he go back to? Adam. We're going to talk in just a moment about this being a cosmopolitan gospel. Cosmopolitan is based on the word cosmos, world. That it's a gospel for the world. And his genealogy was one in chapter 3 had expanded beyond the confines of the Jewish royal line, but traced his genealogy through the flesh all the way back to Adam. Okay. We talked about that, and that's a good point to mention that Luke mentions that in verse 31, Adam was the son of God in a Gentile world. They believed in God that they believed in kind of God at all. But here he's pointing out that he's not a product of chance, that he is indeed a creation of the Almighty God. And when Paul preached in a Gentile society in Acts chapter 17, it's recorded in Athens. That was where he began. You're the children of God, that is, by creation. So that's a good point. Thank you, Linda. All right, so now we're talking about the explanation of things for people that you want your restaurant to serve or whatever it may be. You know, if you had a gas station, you might have a sign outside, petrol. And I'm driving down the road, say, what in the world is that? But you might put under it gasoline for those who were over there visiting on vacation and needed to put something in their vehicle so it'd keep running. So let's look at Luke chapter 1. Verse 8, it happened while he, Zacharias in other words, was performing the priestly office before God in the appointed order of his division. If you're a Jew reading that, what do you know already? You know the kind of things he was doing, right? You're familiar with that. Okay, let's move on. But look at the next verse. According to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. Why are you telling me that? I'm a Jew. I know that. But Luke is explaining when he says priestly office. What does that mean? Are you trying to tell me something about what he's engaged in when this event happened? Yes. And so he's explaining the kind of thing that somebody like me may not be familiar with. But somebody in their day and time would be familiar with this priestly office. In chapter 2, look at chapter 2 and verse 4. You're familiar with the prophecy in the Old Testament, Micah, where the Christ would be born, where it was located. If you're a Jew. But here in Luke 2:4, when Luke is recording the birth of Christ, he said, Joseph went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem. Did you have to tell the Jews that that was a Jewish city? City of David, which is called Bethlehem. All you had to tell a Jew is he went to Bethlehem. And they would understand that. In verse 21 and 22, so they take the child to go through the Jewish requirements for a baby boy. Verse 21, when 8 days had passed before his circumcision, his name was then called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. By the way, if you're a Jew and familiar with the family surroundings, Joseph and all that happened in Matthew, you would already know that. But then he says, when the days had passed for their purification, what's the next phrase? According to the law of Moses. What do you mean purification? Is the baby dirty? Does he need a bath? Oh, purification according to the law of Moses. And when those were completed, they brought him to the Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. So again, pointing to the idea of explaining things. And then, here you see in verse 24, to offer a sacrifice according to what was said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Hold your finger here and go to Leviticus chapter 12. So why did they offer pigeons instead of maybe some kind of larger animal as often done in the sacrifices? Luke explains in Leviticus 12 and 8, if she cannot afford a lamb, then she shall take two turtle doves or two young pigeons, one for a burnt offering and the other for a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement for her and she will be clean. In other words, Joseph and Mary were poor people. They couldn't afford the offering that many would offer. They were poor people. If you and I were planning to bring the king of the world into this earth, the master of all men, the creator, and put him in a human body, what kind of parents would we give him? Where would he be born? Maybe in a castle? Maybe to a ruler? To poor people. In a little city. And all of this has the marks of God's hand at work, not men. Be as it may, you see this in Luke. Look at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22 and verse 7. Then came the first day of unleavened bread. If you're a Jew, the first day of unleavened bread, what do you got to start doing? What do you got to do to get ready? You got to go get a sacrifice. They know that. If you read the other accounts, you'll see the difference. But here, when Luke writes about it, he said, on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. Well, the Jews knew that. Another thing pointing to the fact that the fellow that was driving by and saw Luke's gospel, I need to explain some things to him. What does that mean? What's the point? And so you see these kind of explanations in the Gospel of Luke. If you look at Matthew 26:17, you'll see that that's not explained when you talk about that. They knew, where do you want us to go and get the sacrifice? They knew what that meant. Okay, so whether Luke wrote for Gentile readers or not, these are some of the things that point to it. It's not a critical thing. It's just something to help us maybe better appreciate a book, the nature of the writing and the writer. But one thing is very clear. We don't have to wonder about it. That's our question here on your lesson. We know why he wrote it to Theophilus. And what? Look back at Luke 1. Why did he write this book? Why did he write it? That you might know. There's different words for know in the New Testament. One of them is full knowledge. That's the word he used here. Not just bits and pieces. You might have a full knowledge that you might know the exact truth. And again, those that tell us about the meaning of words, this is from a word that means to trip up on something with a negative on it. So you'll not trip up. Nobody's going to trip you up. I want you to have full knowledge of the exact truth. So I've done a lot of investigation. And so I'm going to tell you the word of witnesses and the result of my investigation. We say, but he was inspired. That's a good point. Michael made that point excellently when he taught the class in my absence. We believe that. But even somebody that doesn't know Luke are not persuaded that it's inspired. Here's a historical document written by a physician, very capable man. He said, I did the research. Now you have a choice. You can say, I don't want to look at the evidence. Well, then you're just biased. But if you're willing, look at the evidence. Here's the evidence. It's a historical document written by a competent man for the purpose of sifting through all the things that were being said and written. Theophilus, I want you to know the exact truth about this person named Jesus. I don't know. It could be. Linda just noted that Luke didn't say touched Peter's mother that had the fever. Was that purposeful? I don't know. But that's an interesting observation. All right, our time is up, so we're going to stop there and we're going to pick up and finish this lesson on Luke. I think the rest of this lesson you'll find very interesting and encouraging, particularly right at the end when we talk about when I was trying to ascertain whether or not what I read about Luke and his purpose, where is his focus? Just a very interesting thing to me, how much he focused on women. The Lord willing, we'll look at that in our class on Wednesday night. Thank you for your attention and your comments this morning.